Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, part of the IndieFeed.com network, a weekly radio show where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. On this show, your host Garrison Reed sits down with Jana Hunter. Jana discusses her recording approach, the growing Austin folk scene, and her thoughts on her musical movement peers.
It's just great when people realize that they don't have to follow a traditional structure for writing songs. Like, you can make a song or you can make anything any way that you want to.
The songwriting talent of Jana Hunter has existed for nearly a decade, through her solo writing and recording, and alongside the rock group Maddie and Mossy. Upon introduction with musician Devendra Banhart, Hunter has seen the expansion of her audience. Through compilations and a 2005 split LP, the relationship between Jana and Devendra led to her signing to Banhart's Nomen Song label and a 2005 full-length release. Here's a snippet of Farm California from the 2005 release, Blank on Staring Heirs of Doom. Jana Hunter will begin a European tour with Castanets in early January before shows at South by Southwest and as part of Devendra Banhart's curated All Tomorrow's Parties.
I know that your brother is also in a band and you have a big family. How big of a part was music in your childhood?
As far as the family went, there wasn't a whole lot of music at my house. We have an older brother that plays music. We have older siblings who were listening to a lot of 80s music while we were growing up. But other than that, I played in orchestras when I was younger. I played violin. So it was a very big, important part of my life, playing the violin in orchestras while I grew up. But not like a family tradition or anything.
Mm-hmm. Your development in orchestra, how does that relate to what you're doing now, you think?
I think I still think in terms of, I think of music composition in terms of orchestra parts, or it's hard for me to write, like I can't write a, you know, I tried to be in a rock band for a while and I can't write a rock song at all. When I write parts for other people to play, they're just very composed, and it's hard for me to get away from the idea of rehearsal and micromanagement of songs and parts a lot of the time. So that's what's carried over, I guess.
The record was recorded on a variety of equipment and a variety of fidelities. Mm-hmm. How did you come about this?
Well, mostly I just recorded whatever I had around at the time. So a lot of the time I had a four track. And a couple of times I didn't have anything except for a tape recorder laying around. And other times I was fortunate enough to have a laptop or a friendly studio around. So it was mostly just a case of convenience. And in a lot of cases there are several recordings of, like almost all of those songs were done in a studio at some point. But I just went with the versions of the songs that I felt most comfortable with. So, even though it doesn't make for a really consistent sounding record, I wanted the songs themselves to be the best version that I had recorded.
Yeah. How does your current solo work differ from the songs you're writing for Maddie and Mossy?
The Maddie and Mossy songs are way more composed. They're also much more collaborative. The other members of the band wrote those songs with me. In some cases, I didn't write the songs at all, and I would just write the lyrics or the melodies. guitar part here and there. And I think it's kind of more nerve-wracking to work with other people on songs, to try to write songs with another person, go through a creative process with another person. So the songs, solo songs, are more intuitive, more straightforward. Most of them took 5 minutes to write, and a lot of Matty and Mossy songs took weeks or months.
Restless, I walk to the shore and picked a place up.
I'm curious to see how the initial association between Devendra and yourself started.
We played a show together in Houston a long time ago. And then we went out for him and everybody. There were several entrants played with him, and some of their friends and relatives were with them. They stayed at my house, camped out and on the floor, and then we went to breakfast the next day. And, you know, it was that kind of slumber party bonding. So the next time, and I gave him a CD and whatever. It was a really great night. I really loved their music, and there was a family kind of feeling. And then they, Devendra, when he came through again, when he was opening for Angels of Light and playing in Angels of Light, they let me open for them. So it was just through those two experiences kind of that we got to know each other a little bit and got to have a respect for each other. And you know him, he never quit. So he kept that connection going.
What impact do you think the Devendra split has had on your fan base? And are you noticing any sort of shifting or visible growth of your audience?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, before that, the only thing that had come out was the only thing that I had had that was received any attention whatsoever, and very little of that, was the Golden Apples compilation. I mean, it received attention, but I didn't receive a whole lot of attention as a result of it or whatever. But yeah, definitely that split made an impact, a noticeable impact.
Could you kind of describe the Austin scene that includes, you know, Peter and the Wolf and yourself and the kind of guerrilla tactics that y'all are doing?
Well, I'm not so much responsible, unfortunately, or for that. I've only kind of gotten to know those folks a little bit, and it's been really wonderful to get to know them, and they that's kind of what they're all about, is just being able to present music in the ways that are most exciting to them. So they don't necessarily want to play club shows all the time or anything remotely like that. Basically, they're crafting their own environment, and it's really amazing to watch. But I haven't been able to be very much of a part of it.
Do you see yourself in, so you don't really feel part of that. Do you feel part of the family Devendra's got going?
To an extent, yeah. There's several of the people that I think that he includes in that group that are really good friends of mine, people that I care about a lot, and people whose music I love, and so I feel close to them on a number of levels. So yeah, I definitely do feel a part of that.
When we spoke last time, you talked about how you record
whatever's close by. So does that mean you're writing? I'm just trying to understand. Do you write and record simultaneously?
Most of the time, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, most of the time I either write while I'm recording, or I write a song and record it immediately afterwards. Which that's the only way I can remember it. So that's kind of the purpose behind that. But it works out pretty well. It like the spontaneity of it feels real good, you know.
Yeah. Do you listen to those things and try to grow upon them, or is kind of different drafts?
Yeah, there have been. So, like, some of the songs that I recorded a while back, I took into a studio, a friend's studio in Houston at one point and did more polished and elaborate versions of those songs, which I still like a lot. I don't know if I'll release them. I don't know if I feel it's appropriate to release them, but... But yeah, I like going back and re-examining them and trying to add things. It's more difficult and more technical. It's a different kind of satisfaction. I think it's amazing that there's such a wide scope of how people create songs, and maybe it's just great when people realize that they don't have to follow a traditional structure for writing songs. Like, you can make a song, or you can make anything any way that you want to. And there's a lot of freedom when you realize that you can create anything that you want to, whatever way that you want to.
It's kind of reinterpreting and reexamining gender roles in a musical sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to see if you had any take on what... you know, Devendra and Anthony and Coco Rosie and what all this group is doing on that sense of a gender roles.
I think it's wonderful, the gender, the identification or opening up as an area for play and experimentation. And I think that it's great that it's not being received as anything shocking, but just something kind of exciting and wonderful, and yeah, just a realm for play and freedom and experimentation. I don't know. It's fun. It's really nice to see it happening.
It really is, and it's really fascinating to see. It's general acceptance.
Yeah.
Where, you know, decades past, maybe even in the 90s, you couldn't be as vague sexually.
Yeah.
And not even sexually, but in your general presentation of what you're doing, as artists are now, and with moderate success.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe you could point to some examples. Like, you could point to like Anthony's kind of idol, like Boy George, and he definitely was, you know, a force in what he was doing, whether or not he intended it to be to start anything or to inspire a lot of people. I'm sure that he did, but there's definitely a different, a major difference in the way that people received Boy George and the way that people would maybe receive him today or are receiving the people that are doing similar things.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guest today, Jana Hunter, can be found on her website, janahunter.tripod.com. Music samples in this show are from her record, Blank and Staring Heirs of Doom, available on Nomad Sound. For information on this release, visit midheaven.com. For information, including a transcription of this interview, please visit IndieInterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in its production, send your thoughts to IndieInterviews@IndieInterviews.com. Thanks again, and see you next week.